The World Meteorological Organization says that 2023 is set to finish as the planet's warmest year on record. That mark comes as world leaders are meeting for the United Nations annual climate summit known as COP28. Recently, the U.S. government's Global Change Research Program released its latest climate assessment report, highlighting the dangers of this rising global temperature for Wisconsin and the rest of the country. In our state, average temperatures are rising and extreme weather events are becoming more frequent, including droughts, floods, and excessive heat waves. These climate changes are already impacting Wisconsin in areas like agriculture, water management, infrastructure, and public health and safety. Our next guest has been researching ways to limit Wisconsin's contribution to climate emissions and to adapt to a changing climate. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you see the impacts of climate change in your life or your community? What areas are you most concerned about? Are you optimistic we can prevent further harms from climate change? Do you have questions for our guest about the latest research and what it means for Wisconsin's future? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. James Bolter is a professor of chemistry and chair of the Department of Public Health and Environmental Studies at UW-Eau Claire. Jim, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me. Nice to be here.
Now, I think for a long time we've talked about global warming and then about climate change as something that affects us in the future. We keep seeing reports that show it affecting us in the present. Can you talk about some recent examples of where we see climate change having an impact here in Wisconsin?
Yeah, well, you know, I think that's really been a major shift that we've observed in the past decade or so. And I think we're all... public opinion would definitely bear that out, that we're all feeling like we're experiencing climate change. I think locally, the one that people are most aware of is just the horrendous air quality we suffered from this summer. I know talking with my students and how many of them were personally affected by it. And I know we all know people in the community who maybe have underlying health concerns, asthma, an underlying heart disease or respiratory illness. For whom it was particularly problematic, right? So that would be a really sort of banner year for climate impacts here locally. But I think people who are closer to the land will notice things like, you know, ice on dates are getting later and later. Ice off dates are getting sooner and sooner. We're seeing greater disparity between extreme dry and extreme wet. We saw that even this past summer where we had, you know, a lot of drought throughout the spring, and then we sort of caught up during the summer with rainfall. So a lot of things like that.
The actual rising temperatures themselves, I've seen, I think it's in this new report and some data you shared with us. We might not notice the extreme heat because a lot of it is sneaking in warmer nighttime temperatures, warmer winter temperatures. Can you talk about that stealth heat and the kind of impact it can have?
Yeah, well, you know, I think people a lot of times will see reports from the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the United Nations Committee of the World's Greatest Climate Experts, and they'll see reports that, wow, we've warmed 1.1 degrees. And they'll say, well, what's a degree, right? There's a couple different ways to answer that. One is, you know, a couple degrees when you're talking about your internal body temperature might be significant, right? But in terms of the climate impact, I think we're less concerned about the sort of global average temperatures and the fact that when we experience those increases in average temperatures, we also increase the frequency of the extremes. And that's, I think, where we're seeing more and more emphasis on the research as the models are able to bear this out, is that we're seeing more and more of the days over 90, the day in this part of the country, in the Southwest, we're seeing more and more days over 100, over 110. And those have really substantial health consequences.
And you look at farming and agriculture a fair amount, and timing is everything, I think, when it comes to temperatures and moisture, precipitation, things like that. What kind of worries do you have in the next few years, even when it comes to farming and the timing of things like when rain falls, when snow melts?
Well, you know, to be totally transparent here, well, I I do study agriculture in the sense of it's a part of the science of climate change. I am by no means an expert in agriculture, and I certainly won't pretend to be. But you know, the kinds of things that we're seeing is with extreme rainfalls, and I'm going to say this, but folks who are out in the fields will have experienced this and have a much better impression of this than I do. And I encourage them to call in, maybe even with their own experiences. But you know, with extreme rainfall events, you know, a couple of years ago, farmers having difficulty getting into their field for planting. And then we have an extreme drought event for you know, maybe a couple months. There's real concern with corn yields. And in fact, I think there was even some concern with corn yields this spring, certainly, although we did catch up quite a ways on precipitation and later in the summer. So it's that inconsistency. In fact, one of the outcomes from the latest national climate assessment, that NCA5 you mentioned earlier, was looking at exactly that. How frequently do we switch between extremely dry to extremely wet? So that sort of frequency of that climate flip within a single year. And even that's projected to increase with climate change.
Talking to Jim Boulter, chair of the Department of Public Health and Environmental Studies at UW-Eau Claire, looking at the latest report on the impact of climate change in the United States, with a focus on the Midwest region as well. You could join in at 800-642-1234. You heard Jim. We want to hear from farmers and gardeners and people who enjoy nature or get out on the ice and are waiting for ice to show up on lakes. If you've had a personal experience of climate variability, climate change that affects your way of life, your way of recreation, join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@wpr.org. Jim, you've done some presentations on how Wisconsin can reduce its climate impact and also mitigate climate impact. What kind of things would be at the top of your list?
Well, you know, if the goal is to reach what is generally referred to as net zero, and I'll talk more about that in a moment, then, you know, there are solutions that are held in common across the country and across the world to some degree. So what is net zero, right? To reach net zero, and the target here is about 2050, so it's not that far off, right? 27 years or so. Net zero is the situation in which we are not putting any net greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, and that is any remaining greenhouse gases that are emitted by human activities are taken up through some other actions. That means the complete phase out of fossil fuels, and that's a very difficult thing to even envision, right? We're so dependent on them. And to be fair, they have vastly improved our quality of life over time. And while they have incredibly negative environmental consequences in terms of the air we breathe, water quality, they have really been the primary factor that has determined what the modern developed world's lives look like. So how do we get there? There's four steps. Step one is first of all, we need to electrify everything. What does everything mean? Our cars? Sure. Yeah. Our hot water heaters? Definitely. Our stoves. Even our furnaces. And here, that's a hard thing to do. So we look at using heat pumps, air source and ground source heat pumps. So we electrify everything. Then we decarbonize the grid. What does that look like? Well, it means moving away from coal and natural gas to solar and wind and nuclear. And that's actually happening quite rapidly as it is, just because of the economics. And then finally, we need to, two last things. We need to decide what can't be electrified. And we need to then offset those emissions through some other way. And we also need to eliminate emissions of the other greenhouse gases, methane, nitrous oxide. And those are really important regionally because those are so often tied to agriculture.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Pat is with us in Madison. Pat, hello.
Hi. I just wanted to share an observation, and and get your input on it. But I'm a stream monitor as a volunteer, and this year, the water body that I monitor has been pretty much dry throughout the year. And in speaking with my counterparts, they've commented similarly in the watershed around here, but also statewide, it's becoming a trend, and it's kind of tied in with the development in the communities where there's, you know, kind of a rapid construction of housing projects and so on, like multi-unit housing, where there's not a lot of consideration given to the rainfall being able to return to the groundwater because of the paving, and just the policy clash of the development is under state law. One of the ways that communities are allowed to raise property tax revenue, but then it comes in conflict with actually allowing the hydrogeologic cycle to kind of play out normally. So we're seeing water bodies kind of dry up statewide, and that's been shared with me by counterparts throughout the state.
Pat, thanks a lot for the call. And Jim, I know monitoring water quality and water quantity are both important issues here, especially if we're seeing cycles of drought and heavy rainfall.
Yeah, I appreciate Pat's comments there. I also appreciate that she's involved in citizen science monitoring of our rivers and streams. That's so important. So a couple thoughts there. It does heighten the conflict between development and preservation. But, you know, at the same time, there are a lot of good solutions that can allow development to proceed while still protecting our hydrogeologic cycle, right? There's a lot of green infrastructure that we see a lot out west, but maybe we need to get better at doing that here in Wisconsin. Things like, recharge areas. So we make sure that the water that's falling, especially when it comes in more intense bursts, has a chance to set on the ground and then slowly percolate down and to regenerate that aquifer. So we see things like rain gardens, for example. A lot of college campuses, I know our campus has several rain gardens that can actually be extremely beautiful, utilizing native species, which is a benefit to biodiversity. So there's so many potentially good solutions here to the problem that she cites, which is very real, right? And while it's not exclusively a climate change issue, it has a lot to do with how we develop. How we develop has a big impact on mitigating those problems or adapting to the extreme rainfall events.
Thanks for that call. We're talking to UW-Eau Claire Public Health and Environmental Studies Professor Jim Bolter about the present and future impact of climate change here in Wisconsin and efforts to mitigate that. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How big a concern is climate change for you? Are you seeing its impact already here in Wisconsin, maybe your own community? Join in with your observations, your questions for our guest at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk now with Jim Bolter, professor and chair of the Department of Public Health and Environmental Studies at UW-Eau Claire. He is with us today to talk about how climate change affects Wisconsin now and what could happen in the future as the U.S. government's Global Change Research Program released its latest climate assessment report. Let's go back to your calls at 800-642-1234. Chris is with us now in Belmont. Chris, hi.
Hi. I actually have two questions. The first is about 20 years ago, I read an article that stated that by the year 2100, Madison's temperatures would be comparable to what Miami's are today. And I'm curious what your opinion is on that or if you have any data. And my second is there are some people that believe that the temperature increase is just due to an interstadial period. And I'm curious as to what your opinion is on that also.
Chris, thanks for the call. First, that second point first, that idea that we're just in a period between glacial expansions, I believe is what Chris is referring to. So the warm-up is maybe normal and natural Earth cycle. Jim, what do you say to that thought?
Yeah, so I mean, the interglacial cycles are real. We have records of them in ice cores dating back over 800,000 years. The problem with that particular thought is that we are currently in an interglacial. So if you look at the historical record, you would expect periods of cold and warm to alternate. And we're already in the warm. So the fact that it's now starting to warm dramatically more so actually puts us into a climate paradigm, which we really haven't seen on this planet. Certainly for 800,000 years, if you look at the ice cores, but if you look at some other records, we're actually, I think, about 3.2 million years. We're well into the millions of years that, since we've seen this kind of warming.
Chris also mentioned the idea that we could have, you know, southern Florida temperatures in southern Wisconsin by the end of this century. Is that a thought? Like, if things get really out of whack, we could see that kind of change?
You know, I'm not seeing the projections that would suggest that particular outcome. If you, Wisconsin Institute on Climate Change Impacts, also known as WICI out of Madison, has done some really nice work on modeling for this. And last time I looked at that, it was more like Arkansas, sort of Missouri, actually more like Missouri, I think, by 2100, depending on the projection, right? And the projection depends entirely upon, more than anything else, upon what human actions are, how effectively we mitigate our impact on the climate. So a worst case scenario would be sort of like Missouri, sort of Kansas, Missouri sort of thing. Not as much like a Florida, again, because the climate in Florida is so heavily marine dependent. I think that would be less likely as well.
Thanks for the call, Chris. Tim joins us now in Winchester. Tim, hi.
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 Yeah. I'm a cross-country skier in northern Vilas County, and we barely have any snow here.
Have you seen, have you been skiing for a long time, Tim? Have you seen changes over the years?
Yes, I've skied 25 Berkeys, and this is one of the lowest snow years so far. You know, it might change on us, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Tim, thanks for the call. Jim, are we noticing things like later initial snowfalls? You mentioned later icing over ponds and lakes. Are we seeing that late start to winter kind of concern?
Yeah, not just the late start, as Chris mentions. And I've been up to the Berkey. I can't say I'm not the athlete he is, so I've never skied it, but I've been up there for it. And it's not just a late start. It's that, you know, a lot of times, and he's experienced this obviously many times in the past decade or so, we get rainfall on top of snowpack and it just completely destroys the snowpack. So either you're not getting the precipitation, we're not seeing overall less, we're not projecting rather overall less wintertime precipitation as a really strong model outcome. But because it's much more frequently at warmer temperatures, it means it translates into less snowpack. And this is, of course, not just a northern Wisconsin thing. The entire ski industry is quite concerned about this. There's a lot of professional skiing organizations that have been really out in front in advocating for climate policy because they see really an existential threat to their sport that they love. To northern Wisconsin, that has more than just aesthetic concerns, right? There's an enormous economic impact to the loss of that snowpack, not just for skiing and the Birkebeiner, which are huge impacts in their community, but also for snow machines and all the rest and the tourism industry up north. So it's a deep concern, and I share it with your caller. It saddens me personally, but I find it concerning too for the state.
Tim, thanks a lot for that call. Jim, before we run out of time, I want to talk about some other human potential impacts of climate change. People have raised concerns that less harsh winters and warmer nighttime temperatures, things like that, could expand the range for different kinds of diseases that can affect humans and other mammals in the state. How big a concern is that?
Oh, it's a huge concern. I was just looking at data in that NCA5 report, that National Climate Assessment, and looking at, for example, Lyme disease counts by state from 2000 to 2019. And, you know, Wisconsin has the largest increase in Lyme disease counts of the entire Midwest, followed by Minnesota. And we also know that Lyme disease is vastly underreported. It's the most common vector-borne disease in the United States right now, and has really, really awful consequences for a lot of people. In addition to that, we're seeing, you know, other vector-borne diseases in the southern part of the state, that even from mosquito-borne diseases. And that's something that we're, that public health departments are watching very closely, but it is certainly a projection into the future that we're going to see more of what we would normally consider to be tropical diseases. Southern United States, of course, experiencing that quite strongly already.
In just our last minute or so, we've got this big international conference going on, the new report that we've been talking about here in the U.S. Are you optimistic, Jim, that policy and behavior changes are going to start happening and at least avoiding the worst case climate change scenarios?
Am I optimistic? It, as we're trying to wrap up the call, right? That's a that's a hard question to ask. Is it possible? Yes. The models show us that it is possible. One of my favorite quotes that I utilize a lot is, we don't lack the technology. We don't lack the knowledge. We actually don't lack the economic wherewithal. We don't even lack the policy models to pull it off. What we really seem to lack is the will, political and otherwise. Do we have that will at the international level? We will see. COP28 in Dubai is an interesting setting, and this, that's a whole nother conversation. Mm-hmm. But I think it's drawing attention, even though I think they're maybe sweeping some of the need to eliminate fossil fuels under the rug at that conference. We are really seeing a lot of attention being paid to methane as an important greenhouse gas, a very important greenhouse gas. We're seeing more conversations about the health impacts of climate change. And we're also seeing how our food systems adversely affect climate change, and how our food systems can evolve to both withstand climate change and also to mitigate our impacts on the climate.
Jim, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Thanks so much.
That's James Bolter, professor of chemistry, chair of the Department of Public Health and Environmental Studies at UW-Eau Claire, with us today to look at the impacts of climate change in Wisconsin.